Welcome to the Creativity Cafe for the creatively adventurous and the relentlessly curious.
We have inspiring conversations with creative women from all over the world.
I'm Paige Baldwinando, and I'm a creativity coach who helps people maximize their creative potential, and I'm also a writer.
And I'm Jordana Matsuda. I'm an illustrator on my creative journey, with Paige helping me along the way.
We're both long-term residents of Japan, a country bursting with creative energy that inspires us every day.
So go grab a cup of tea and join us in discovering new creative landscapes here on the Creativity Cafe.
Hello, Jordana.
Hi, Paige.
So you had mentioned to me a while ago something about summer holidays on the coast in Cornwall. Will you tell me a bit more about that?
Oh, yes. So growing up, it was just my mom, my brother and me. And my mom worked, she's a single parent working full time. So summer holidays were just amazing. She always wanted to make it special, magical. Mm-hmm. And if we didn't go to Trinidad, which is where my mom's originally from, we would always go somewhere in England. And Cornwall and Devon were just like magical places as a child. It was, you know, it took a long time to drive down there, but once we were there, it was the fresh sea air and the fresh food and fresh fish and the beaches, and it's just like wild nature down there for me. We just loved it. It's many, many special memories from the West Country, as we call it.
Wonderful. Yeah. Like as you're describing it, I feel like I can practically smell the salt water.
Yeah.
Because there's something about being near the ocean that is so just visceral, right? Like you feel it in your body, you feel it in your spirit almost, like there's a shift that happens, right?
Yeah. Like I think when I'm on the beach or on the, you know, the cliff edge looking out at the ocean, there's just something mesmerizing and like embracing, and it kind of like embraces you, that kind of view. Transports you to like, yeah. I guess we all have a connection to nature in one way. For me, the ocean is definitely my happy place.
Yeah, it is for me too. And yeah. I think there's something about it, like even again, as I'm listening to you talk about it, there's this feeling that I get in my body of like how small you can feel next to it, right?
Yes.
Like it's so humbling. And it's also, you're part of it, you know, at the same time. And that deep connection to it is something that, you know, I think we lack a lot of the time in our everyday life. We don't necessarily have that deep connection to nature in our everyday life. So to feel it is not only special, but it's like profound.
Yep. It really is, isn't it?
So our conversation with today's guest, Joe Payne, who lives in Devon and who paints these incredible seascapes and skyscapes that are not necessarily realistic. Like we're not talking about a realistic, you know, painting of this is exactly what it looked like at this exact moment, right? We're not having a photographic image, but the way she paints brings out this feeling of being there near the sea and what it feels like when you're just in wonder at it. Would you agree with that?
Yes. Like what I love about Joe's work is like if you look at it from a distance, it looks exactly like the ocean. Like you really feel the waves and the clouds, and you can almost feel the wind blowing when I'm looking at her work. And then you like look closer and it takes on a different personality almost when you look closer to it, and it becomes more abstract, but still has that same magical feeling.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. You feel like you're in it, you know?
Yes. Yes. You really do. Hey.
And you also feel this sense of like genuinely, I don't know, that awe that comes with being in nature. It's so hard to capture in art, right? Like so many artists over the history of, our human contributions to these attempts at capturing this relationship to nature, this relationship to the awe that we feel when we're in it. It's not an easy thing to do, is it?
It's incredibly hard. Like her use of color and texture, it just blows my mind. It really does, because it's incredibly hard to do that. And she makes it look so effortless when you look at her works. Like on her Instagram, she often shows like her painting, what like reels of her painting, and it's like, yeah, she makes it look so easy, but it's really not.
But I think, as we find in this conversation with her, what she talks about is like that she gets to this place where she's not thinking and she's not trying to do it, right? It's kind of more of an intuitive relationship. And you and I have had so many fascinating conversations about intuition and its role in creativity, but to me, Jo's work is one of the most powerful examples of how it can come about that your intuition really will guide you towards something magical if you follow it.
Yes. And yeah, she seems to have a very close connection to her intuition, which, yeah, I'm still working on as an artist. I think it's something that has taken me a while to embrace, to realize the power of it. But you can really feel it in Jo's work that she walks with her intuition, like they're w working together. Yeah, and when you listen to our conversation, you can hear, how she creates her work, and to hear that part of the conversation really inspired me to, embrace that part of me a bit more, because I do tend to overthink things. So yeah, that was really,
It
yeah, this was very inspiring for me at this point in my, my career. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm very grateful for this conversation. And yeah, so let's have a listen to our conversation with Joe Payne. Originally from London, Joe Payne has spent the last 10 years living on the North Devon coast by way of Surrey and Kent. A self-taught artist, Joe creates atmospheric and elemental sea and sky paintings that are riveting in their scope and emotional impact. Driven and inspired by her coastal surroundings, Joe's paintings explore the endless changing flow of the natural elements present in her daily life. With her intuitive, free style of painting, Joe often has several works on the go at once and approaches each one as the feeling draws her. We're so excited to have you here with us, Joe. Welcome.
Hello, thank you very much for inviting me. I'm very pleased to be here.
Yeah, we're so excited. I've admired your work for many years. So to
Oh,
get
thank
to
you.
talk to you about your work is just, yeah, very exciting.
Oh, thanks.
So Joe, we start off our podcast always asking each guest the same question, because it's always very revealing and interesting. So can you tell us, what's your first memory of doing something creative?
Well, I was going to tell you a story about me drawing on the wall in a red crayon in the playroom, but I actually don't. I only remember the consequences of that, which was to blame the rocking horse when asked. So
Oh.
the rocking horse was blamed, but I don't actually remember creating that. So instead, I'm going to just tell you about this gorgeous little scrapbook. So I used to go and stay with my grandmother a lot. And I was given a scrapbook that was made of cloth with like cloth pages, linen pages. And I just remember, well, I've still got it. I found it the other day and had a good look at it. And even just seeing the things that I cut out, age probably 3 or 4, with those little round-ended scissors that they give you for, if you're a child, for safety, that don't cut very well. And I had, this was in the 60s, the late 60s, that's how old I am. And I was probably 3 or 4, and I cut all these little pictures out of magazines and old dress patterns and things. And things that I liked are little cartoons in comics and that sort of thing. And just that glue, I don't know if you ever remember this glue that came in a little blue pot, and it was soft, sort of white glue, and you used a white spatula to put it on, and it smelt of something like frangipane, almond paste, something like that. And I used to very carefully cut out these shapes of little girls in dresses that I liked and put them in this scrapbook. And I'm delighted that I still have it.
Yeah, that's
How many?
amazing that you still have it. That's
I
like
know.
what a gem from your childhood.
I know, it really, really is. And my grandmother, yeah, it really reminds me of my grandmother, who was very precious to me. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it's so interesting, isn't it, to see the things that the young you was interested in and thinking
I
about.
know. I know. I'm really fascinated because I mean, I don't want to go off on too much of a tangent, but I've recently been writing down memories, which I'll maybe talk to you about later, to do with trying to create a series, a paint, some paintings. And so I've been thinking about memories and writing down lists of them. And so to come across this and actually look at it from the point of view of trying to remember, was really lovely. And yes, very revealing to see. I even remember there's a picture in there of a little girl with a red pinafore dress on it, and the red pinafore dress has a cat on it, and she has white tights and little black shoes. And I just remember wanting that dress, you know. And so the fact that I was so young, but you know, at my age, I can still remember that want is quite special, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, those things are sometimes the things that really stick, right? Like a visual memory that's attached to a feeling, like a really
Yes.
powerful feeling. Yeah.
Yes. And
Oh.
the outside of this scrapbook is it's also material, and it's little blue teddies and things on a background, a kind of, well, it's a dirty background now, but yeah, it's a beautiful thing to have. Oh, and I can also see that in the last pages, when I was a bit older, I just wanted to fill up the scrapbook, and I just stuck a few old Christmas cards in with sellotape, so totally careless.
Oh, it's a sign of growth as well, though, isn't it?
Yeah,
They did
I
this in
suppose.
So, Jill, will you tell us a bit more about your path towards where you are today as an artist, from that child who was so fascinated by, the red pinafore dress and,
Yes.
to where you are now?
Okay. Well, so I didn't come from a particularly artistic background, but I did enjoy art at school in my teenage years, and especially because I wanted to go on the Paris trip for the art history, the history of art course that I was on at school, and I loved the history of art. And after I left school, I had the opportunity to live on my own for a year in a studio apartment in London, because I was studying. I was actually studying to be a Montessori teacher, which was my early career. And so I was in this place, and I actually had peace and quiet. I was on my own, really, for the first time. And an artist friend who had given up painting in oil paints and taken up acrylics gave me all his old oil paints. And I'd never had anything like that before. And I started, obviously, I had to have a look at them all and see what, you know, I could do with them. I had literally no knowledge at all. I had no knowledge about how to use them. There was no internet in those days either. So anyway, I had this wonderful treasure of these very old oil paints, some of which were quite hard to open. And once I opened them and I started, I think I went and bought myself a some boards or something to draw on, to paint on. And so I got these colors, and I decided to use every single one of the colors in one painting. And so I got this great big board that I got from the school I was working in at the time, And I carted it home on the bus. And I'd asked my father for an easel for my birthday and a paint box. And I still have that paint box as well. So I set up this great big board, and I used every single one of those colors, and I just created little shapes with each one, and each from sort of the middle working out towards the edge of the canvas. Anyway, I got the bug. I got the painting bug mm-hmm. and the art bug, and I just decided, oh my goodness, I'm going to be an artist. And this was aged 18, wow. maybe 19. But the funny thing is that I later forgot about that totally. So anyway, I had this glorious year living in this place, undisturbed, and I would go off to hardware shops, buy great big pieces of hardboard, cart them home on the bus, set them up on my easel, and do all sorts of painting. I spent all my money on, there was an art shop around the corner, and I used to go there and buy more and more materials. I sent off for books about art. I went to the library and I looked into as many things as I could look into. And I was truly, truly enthusiastic for that time. So that was decades ago, obviously. Mm. And after I stopped living there, I don't think I did that much art. And eventually I met my first husband and we had children, and, you know, my creative energy was taken up elsewhere, as in having my children and raising them. And I think I did some drawing from time to time, but I really didn't do that much painting. I did some writing. So the creative juices were always there, but they were sort of dormant. So it really wasn't until I moved to Devon in 2012. So, yeah. Nearly 11 years ago, I moved here now. So I found my paints, not these old oil paints, but I mean, I had moved on since then and I had other paints. I found my paints and I thought, oh, I wonder. Anyway, I was totally enchanted by my surroundings here in Devon. I mean, really bowled over by these big, huge skies that we get and the just the whole coastal landscape. And so I started to try and do some little paintings of photographs that I'd taken, because I took photographs all the time when I was out. And I thought, oh, this is really, really enjoyable. So I carried on, but there was something a bit lacking. And then I remembered how I used to paint when I was younger, not with any aim, but just purely for the joy of the materials, the colours. And so I started to do a bit more of that. But of course, the sea and the sky and the horizons was creeping in. And it was really when I stopped painting from photographs that my paintings started to really feel good to me. Yes. And I actually got to the stage where I felt like, oh, I could frame this. You know, this is nice. I could frame it. So the next part of it was that I wanted to share my paintings. And I didn't know very much about Facebook, but I managed somehow to start a little page. And I didn't even really think about what to call it, but it just came to me to call it Sea Painter. And of course, that has stuck. Mm. So I shared a few paintings. And I was really amazed and delighted that people were responding to them positively. That felt quite vulnerable, but also really amazing to have people responding like that. Mm. So the next thing was to actually share them in real life. And there was a cafe on the beach here that we frequented quite often. So I asked the people in the cafe, would you like some paintings on your wall? And could they be for sale? And I could give you a little bit of the money. Anyway, so these people were very enthusiastic and yes, they would like paintings. So, but they said to me, we'll do that on condition that you do the Ilfracombe Art Trail with us as your venue. So I said, oh, okay, I'll do that. So the Ilfracombe Art Trail is a yearly event where artists open up their studios or they show their work in various different ways, and so they wanted me to do it in this in their cafe. So that was exciting. In order to do this, I had to go and get a form, and I went to get the form from a gallery that I'd never been into. And when I was in the gallery picking up the form, the lady in the gallery said, oh, well, what do you paint? And she asked me to show her. So, of course, I was showing her these photographs, and she was really interested. So she said, would you show some of your paintings in my gallery? Oh, so I'd gone from, painting in my kitchen or dining room to showing a few little paintings in a cafe to suddenly being asked by a gallery owner if I would let her have some paintings in there. Goodness me, I was like, I could hardly believe this. I could hardly believe it. But so I have had a lot of help along the way, I must say. First of all, the guy that gave me the paints in the first place, all those years ago, decades ago. Second of all, the people in that cafe and the woman in the gallery. And that gallery became a real learning place for me as well, because she taught me a lot of things, like you need to frame these, you can't just have them on the wall. And so I actually was doing this art trail in two venues, this cafe and this gallery. And the gallery owner went even further than that. She did a private view the evening before the art trail began for me and one other artist. And that was, I mean, beyond any dream I'd ever had. It really was. Because in those younger days in that apartment, buying those books and magazines about art and everything, it was like a fantasy. It wasn't like real life. So here I was in real life, having a preview evening and, an exhibition. It was unbelievable. And loads of people came to this preview evening. And it felt so good. It was amazing. And then somebody bought a painting of mine. And the gallery owners sort of almost stopped everybody, said, oh, painting sold, painting sold. And then not that long afterwards, somebody bought another painting of mine. This is all in one evening.
Wow. That must have felt very well. I don't know. How did that
Oh, it felt unbelievably good. It
feel?
was sort of overwhelming, but also just one of the people who bought a painting was someone I knew. Oh no, in fact, three of my paintings sold that evening. And I vaguely knew one of the people, and I knew the other two people quite well. And just the fact that people were parting with their money for something that I had just made was incredible, absolutely incredible.
It's a wonderful feeling.
Yes. So that's how it kind of started. And I spent maybe a year or two with that gallery. And then I had a period of time where I wanted to do things on my own and I didn't want a gallery. And that was a real learning experience as well, because I had to learn how to have an online shop and all of those kind of things, and how to package up work and send it. And it was a lot to learn, and I enjoyed it most of the time. But the amazing thing was that I could just make things out of paint and canvas, and they connected with other people enough that those people actually wanted my paintings on their walls. I mean, it was and almost still is unbelievable.
It is interesting, like as an artist, you obviously you're looking at your work every day and you're making it and so absorbed in it. It's hard to know how other people will receive your work, isn't it? So to get that affirmation from other people is amazing, I'm sure.
It is. It's wonderful, and it's also it can be a little bit almost crippling if people have seen something that you are still in progress with, and they love it like it is, you know. And because my criteria for sending paintings out into the world is I have to love it. It has to be something that I want to hang on my wall. And that's it. It's simple.
Well, it strikes me that, part of what is so appealing about your work is that in sort of embedded in it as part of it is this very free, intuitive feeling. Like there's a gestural quality and there's a quality of just like, I don't know, your feelings are in it to me when I look at things. And I think that's part of what people are responding to, so enthusiastically. And for you to feel, that it's at the point where you are ready to say it's finished, I think is, I don't know, indicative of your sense, your intuitive sense of, your relationship with that particular piece and that particular moment that you're conveying in the piece. Does it?
There's a moment, like an aha moment, where I sort of relax. When I get to a painting, when I think it's finished, I feel like, ah, yes, here we are. This is it. And that emotional connection that you spoke of, that is what's so magical for me, that my feelings and my emotions go into my paintings. And that the person who's looking at them, if they feel something, that's the connection, isn't it? That my emotions have gone into it, and they're coming out the other side, and sort of, yeah, which I find so magical, and it's a wonderful part of it. It really is.
They are just so evocative. I really feel that I
Thank you.
can, just keep looking at them and keep finding new things. But there's also I think it's a very rare experience to feel, as I do when I'm looking at your paintings, like it almost feels similar to being in a natural setting.
Gosh, well, that's so wonderful, because that's all I hope for. That is really all I hope for. That somebody can would like, that once somebody's looking at a painter, that they do want to look further, that they want to keep looking at it, and that it provokes some kind of feeling.
I think it, like, for me, that's like what Peter, what I really love about your work is, yeah, I feel like I'm there. And like I just hearing you speak about your work, obviously that like emotion and that connection to your environment just, it comes through the paintbrush.
Well, I'm so pleased that you find that and that you think that. That's really fantastic. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Well, one of the things I was so curious about is that, as I'm looking at your work, so, like they really kind of walk this fine line, this subtle line between like realism and abstraction. Like there is, as I was saying, like this feeling of being in nature, which might indicate that they are hyper realistic, but they're not. They're lovely.
Yes. Well, I think for me, that this is when the paintings started to come alive, was when I stopped trying to make real scenes of real places. I do still sometimes do that, but I still have my own twist on it, or rather my own feelings about it. That I will, I might use a photograph, for instance, now, not often, but say for a particular shape of a headland or something. But I'm not, then I want to make up my own sky and my own reflections and my own light and all of that. And that's when the painting started to come alive, when I stopped trying to get it right and stopped trying to be accurate. Because, you know, really, you might as well have a photograph. If you're going to do that, you might as well have a photograph. And I don't find it that interesting. Whereas if I just make free on a canvas, it's inevitably going to end up with a sky and a horizon and reflections, because that's what I absolutely love. But it's going to be my own versions of those things that I've absorbed, really. So all of that stuff is in me, because I'm here in this environment and I walk in this environment a lot. And I'm just absorbing the elements. So it's all kind of in me.
Yeah. Was it quite easy for you to make that kind of move from trying to make something realistic to embracing the more abstract element?
I think it was once I started to do that, because I just thought, try and paint how you used to paint, which is with no knowledge.
Yes.
And honestly, sometimes I do think the more I know, the less I can do that, you know, and I have to remind myself to get back to the not knowing time. Then I'm more free, and so you get more sort of, I suppose you'd call it artistry about it, and less accuracy. You know, there's no point trying to get it perfect. In fact, I don't want them to be perfect. I quite like to embrace the imperfections, and I have to resist the urge to tidy things up.
Yeah, I think the powerful emotional impact comes in part from your willingness to let go of that, right?
Yeah.
Your willingness to, it almost, I don't know, would you say that you're in like a conversation with the painting? Because that's how it looks to me, that you have been in conversation with this piece.
Well, that's a nice way of putting it. And it sort of is like that. When I'm actually painting, I am completely and utterly absorbed in what I'm doing. And I'm not even really thinking. You know, I've taken out of my thoughts. It's almost like meditation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm so absorbed in what I'm doing. I mean, obviously, I stop and I stand back. And I've now got a very big studio, so I can walk quite a long way away from the painting to have a look in my pauses. But when I'm actually painting, I'm not thinking about anything. Me and the painting are there together, and it's part of me.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's how it feels. It feels like there's this emotional back and forth between
Goodness,
you know, and that is what arrests the viewer, you know, like to me anyway, for me as a viewer, I'll speak for myself. That is what feels like I just want to keep looking at this, because I am feeling not what I'm feeling when I look at a photograph, which is also, a photograph is nice, but I think we're also at a point in our history as humans, as viewers of art, where photographs have a different place in our understanding of the world, or our interaction with the world, or our interaction with art than they used to, right? We just don't have the same relationship with them that we did even 20 years ago or 10 years ago. You know, they're different now for us. Yes. And a painting can do something then that the photograph simply can't, in this emotional regard.
Yes, I think that makes sense to me. Yes.
Yeah. It's lovely. So I'm also curious, you have mentioned part of how we have interacted with your work is on Instagram. And yes. I love seeing what you do in real time. And you share so generously there. And you recently had introduced some color experiments into your work, which I find fascinating. Like, you incorporated some bold greens and like bright fuchsia.
Yes.
Names. And then you've also, I know you've been using gold leaf for some time, but you you mentioned that you had some new ways of kind of experimenting with that. So I'm curious what you've learned in these recent color experiments that you've been playing with.
The painting I think you're talking about with the color experiments was this big panoramic canvas, and I don't use green very often, oddly. It's just a color that I find quite difficult. And I was using green on this, which is unusual for me. And I'd made this great big greeny kind of sky, and green and pink for me go very nicely together. And I decided to use, I bought ages ago, this little, like a fine line applicator, and you put paint in it, and then it's got a little tiny, tiny hole with a needle in it, and you take the needle out and the paint comes out, and it's very, very fine lines you can make. And I don't usually I put paint on with palette knife, and then I move it around with brushes or spatulas or all sorts of tools, but I don't usually do little drawing-y kind of lines. So that was the experiment, was using these lines to kind of doodle with paint. And it was so much fun, because mm-hmm. part of what I'm interested in is to try to see how abstract I can go with my landscapes, whether I can make what I would call abstract landscapes. And so using strange colors like green in the sky is a start for that. And what I discovered with that was that actually I really like doodling with paint with this fine liner. And so that's led me to, I've bought some of those Posca paint pens, which I haven't used yet, but I'm going to use them on a little series that I'm thinking about, which is to do with what I was speaking about earlier about digging deep for the memories. I'm going to try and do some abstract paintings. I'm going off on a tangent now, sorry. But anyway, so this was the lines, the doodling with paint, the lines and the colours. And weirdly, with this painting, I've ended up with a painting that can be hung either way up.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that was a surprise. Nothing to do really with the colour aspect, I suppose, but eventually the green got mostly painted over. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of what I share on Instagram is partway through, and you know, as you know, you can just, like, especially with this one, it was an acrylic painting. You can keep painting over the top of it. And so if you think green sky is great one day, and the next day you look at it and you just think, no, you can change it. Yes. And this painting was up on an easel during the art trail that I did this year. And it was unfinished with its green sky and its lines from these doodles. And it was the only unfinished piece that was in the studio when visitors came. And people were attracted to this.
Wow.
I wished I kind of hadn't had it out, because there was a couple and the wife really liked it. And I was saying, yes, but it's not finished. You know, you can't buy it. And she was saying, oh, well, my husband doesn't agree. He likes this other thing. But I really like this. And so that kind of inhibited me once I knew somebody loved it like it was, when for me it wasn't finished.
Yeah.
Which is why it ended up being completely different colours and everything else. And as I say, I ended up with it one way up, and I was just painting the sides of the canvas. So I turned it up the other way and thought, oh, I prefer it this way. So anyway, I am actually going to put two strings on the back of this and sell it as a painting that can be two paintings in one.
Oh, I love that.
And the gold leaf, the extra thing that I did with gold leaf. So yes, I have been using gold leaf for a few years, on and off. I work in phases. But recently, what I started to do was to cover an entire surface with gold leaf. So instead of just doing little details, do a whole surface in gold leaf and then paint a painting on top of it. And that is quite an extraordinary thing to do, especially when you first do it.
Wow.
For that, I obviously didn't use 24 karat gold leaf. I used the imitation stuff because it needed to be sealed. Yes. And the point for me was that I wanted to paint on the top with oil paints. So that's been a new thing for me. And it's a lot of work to do it that way, but it is good fun. And I've made a few nice paintings that way, but I also still like the other way.
Yeah.
Which is just to add gold leaf in strategic places and then paint around it a little bit.
Well, it must be very interesting to try things like that as your intuition guides you.
Yeah.
To, you know, like, okay, what's going to happen if I do this? What'll happen if I do this?
Exactly.
So, Jo, you mentioned before a bit about a new project that you're working on. Yeah, so could you tell us a little bit? So what is this project and why are you excited about it? Can you share with us?
I think to say working on is a slight exaggeration.
Okay.
I get lots and lots of ideas and I write them down. And so I have a little place on my phone where I write things down. And one of the ideas was to, in trying to explore making more abstract paintings. I don't know, I had this idea that to take really early childhood memories and just be thinking about, say, take one of those memories. Say one was the first dream I had when I was 3 or 4, about a bizarre dream about a pelican and a marmalade cat running around the back garden in our London house. Weird that I would still remember a dream from that age, but I did. And so I wrote that down. I thought, what would it be like to be painting and thinking about one specific memory, you know, but be trying to make an acrylic painting? So I wouldn't say I'm working on it yet, but it's a thought. It's a thought that I might go there.
And I often feel like these thoughts, and you obviously have such strong memories from that time of your life, for them to be coming back to you again now feels like your intuition's trying to tap you on the shoulder and tell you something, maybe.
Yeah, maybe it is. Yeah. Maybe it is. And also there's that other thought, which is that in creating that Facebook page in the first place that was called Sea Painter, and I am totally inspired by the sea and the sky and all that's around me, but I have boxed myself into a corner of, this is what I do, I paint sea paintings, and I do, and I probably will paint sea paintings for the rest of my life, but that doesn't mean that I don't want to explore other avenues.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, I think that part of what you have shown in your work even thus far is that the kind of rebirth element, like you're very capable of taking things to the next level and moving them forward in whatever way works. And so, you
know, I'm getting very much ahead of myself here, because I haven't actually, it's not true to say I haven't done any work on them. I have actually, but it's been kept to myself for the moment. I haven't shared pictures of those types of things yet. I'm not ready for that yet.
Yeah.
And I think some artwork is just for you as well, isn't it? Like, we don't have to share everything with everybody. And maybe unless that timing feels right. But, you know, I think, you know, like we've kind of mentioned before, there's so much emotion connected to the art that we create. Sometimes we don't need to show everyone.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Yes, I agree.
So I'm curious, Jo, when you come to a place where your creativity is just not really flowing in its usual way, like you're finding yourself stuck in some regard, how do you help yourself come back to a creative flow that feels more natural to you?
Well, I try not to worry about that, because that is just how it goes, isn't it? I mean, you're not going to be painting 24 hours of the day. It's part of the natural creative flow, I think, that sometimes you're not in the mood.
Yeah.
And so if it's, I mean, if I get stuck or I'm not feeling it, I really don't worry about it. It's an opportunity to do some boring thing like the hoovering or something that needs to be done that normally I wouldn't be bothered doing. You know, I my creative flow is, but I mean, part of that creative flow are the ebbs and the flows of it.
Yes.
You know, you're not, when I first started this, I was painting so many hours a day because I was totally obsessed and I couldn't stop, and I wouldn't eat, you know, or drink or anything until I really had to, because I was so immersed in it. And I injured myself doing too much, you know, physically doing too much. And now I don't want to be painting for hours and hours and hours on end unless I feel like doing that, which, you know, I wouldn't. I mean, it's exhausting. It's exhausting. Yeah. Painting, being immersed like that is exhausting, and probably 2 or 3 hours would be the maximum time I would spend now before just thinking, no, I need to stop. So, I mean, if I'm in the studio, that's enough for me. You know, if I want to paint, I go into the studio, and if I don't feel like painting, maybe I would just tidy the studio. But it won't be long before something catches my eye. If I'm in the middle of a painting and I'm not feeling it, you know, and I don't know what to do next, I literally take that painting off the easel, put it out of my sight and forget about it, and move on to something else. And then I find that painting maybe the next day, maybe the next month, maybe the next year. And then I'll know what to do with it. But I don't ever sit around agonizing about my paintings, you know, how to resolve this or that or the other. I just, if it's not flowing, it's put aside, and I will just start something else. Or if I don't feel like painting that day, I'll have a day off and go for a walk and, you know, phone some friends and do some other things. It's not a problem for me, really.
Yeah, that sounds like a very just amicable relationship.
Yes, and I guess it hasn't always been that way, but over time it's become like that.
I wonder if, like, because of where you live, like, you're surrounded with such beauty outside, I'm just wondering if that helps with going with that flow, because you are so kind of visually stimulated outside of your house
that, oh yeah,
you know, you kind of you learn to roll with it. Like, if you're not feeling it whilst you're in your studio, you can go outside and just absorb it.
Exactly. And I mean, I have my lovely dog, who is my little friend and studio companion, and he needs to be walked a couple of times a day anyway. So yes, I could always just go out and go for a walk and look out the window.
I spent my childhood every summer down in Cornwall, Devon, so I'm just like, I love it down there. Now, you know, living in the middle of the city, I do miss that element, that like kind of rough, lovely, beautiful nature that, you know, we just don't have in the city. So I'm envious. You can live
well. It's nice to have both. It's nice to have both. And I think when I first moved here, I thought, I'm never going to a city again. You know, I just love it here. It's fantastic. But actually, I also find it very stimulating to visit a city. You know, I go to London quite a bit. I have daughters in London, and I recently went to Paris and Amsterdam, and I love the contrast. I love contrast in life, actually, generally.
Does make it more interesting, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
And even just changing the scenery a little bit, even for a few days, can sometimes be so invigorating.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Jo. It's just been lovely to speak
with
you.
I've enjoyed it so much. Thank you both.
And so if people want to find you online, where can they do that?
Okay, well, I have a website called seapainterstudio.com. But the main place to find me is on Instagram, seapainter_Joe. And I, on my website, it directs you to, it can, you know, you can find your way to Instagram and to my shop. My work is for sale in my Etsy shop, which is also called
Brilliant.
Sea Painter Studio.
Yeah.
Lovely. And
And
I'll put all the links and everything in the show notes. So if anyone
okay.
wants to go, I recommend everybody go and check Joe's work because you will be,
That's what I was going to
transported to another place.
Oh, that's so kind. Thank you.
That's exactly what I was just about to say. Like, if you are on Instagram, or even if you're not, please go and check out her work because it really is wonderful. And we're so appreciative of you sharing your time and your insights with us today. Thank you, Joe.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate all those kind words, and it's been lovely, lovely to speak to you both.
Okay, so our question today is an anonymous one that came to us. And the question is, how do you manage staying creative while you're traveling? And I love this question. How about you, Jordana? How do you manage to stay creative when you're like, because you just came back from a nice long trip.
Yes, I was in the UK over the summer and I took all my art supplies that I usually use or that I love the most. And to be honest, I didn't really do much creative work. I did some collage work. I did a few days of sketching when we were out and about. But I didn't do any painting. I didn't do anywhere near as much as what I usually would do. So out of that 5 weeks, I probably had about 5 days of being creative. So I do struggle. I struggle to make time, to do it when there's constantly people around me. It's really difficult. I find it difficult to make that time for myself, that's for sure.
And it's not just the people either, is it? It's like the frenetic energy of like moving and doing things
Yes.
all the time. Like you're not very settled. Even if you're staying in the same place while you're traveling for a while, it's still like you're not home and you're not in your regular groove.
Yeah. I think as well it's one of those things that maybe the more you travel, the more you get used to just picking up your art stuff and working, as opposed to whilst I'm at home, it's more of a scheduled thing. You know, it's not a spontaneous thing. Which is probably where the difficulty lies for me when, now I think about it. I'm not necessarily spontaneous creative. So maybe it just depends on your style of working as well.
And also your medium, you know, because your medium is one that really requires you to like be in a place and have a table and have, you know, certain things, but you know, let's say, for example, if you're a guitarist and you're traveling with your guitar, maybe it's not as difficult to pull it out and play.
That's true. That's true. How about you when you're traveling? Do you manage to do any creative things?
Well, my medium is writing, and very often I find that I'm happy as long as I'm like what I always call, and I know you've heard me say this, keeping the tap open. By which I mean, you know, so I grew up in a house where the pipes freeze in the winter very easily because it's cold. And in order to keep the pipes from freezing, if you just leave the tap going a little tiny bit, they won't freeze. The water's moving enough through. And I think that when we use this as a metaphor for creativity, it's really helpful. Like we don't have to have a lot happening, you know, but staying in connection with that creative element of ourselves. Can just be very grounding and can also keep that relationship with our creativity feeling consistent, you know, even if it's less consistent than it otherwise would have been, you know.
That's a really nice way to think about it because it feels doable and it feels like reassuring. Okay, if I just do this little bit, then it keeps me going.
Yes, exactly. And I do think that's the other piece is like keeping your expectations relatively low and giving yourself credit for everything you do while also
like looking around and seeing, well, what are some other creative things that I'm actually doing? You know, like, am I baking cupcakes with my friends' children? You know, like that's actually kind of creative and I'm enjoying that. I'm enjoying the process of icing these cupcakes. And it's not what I would ordinarily do, but it's still using that muscle. You know, yeah. Like giving yourself kind of an open, wider view of what counts.
Yes.
It's really helpful because, yeah, when we do that, it allows for us to feel good about the creative process and kind of avert that tendency to shame ourselves or feel bad about doing what we think we should be doing.
Yeah. Know? And maybe as well, like when I think about it, I went to so many art exhibitions and small little galleries. So where I wasn't, you know, physically making or physically being creative, I was immersing myself in so many different, you know, creative places.
Yeah.
And just, you know, I think sometimes, you know, it's okay to think this is a part of my creative process, being in a new environment, taking in this new scenery, you know, experiencing different food. It all enriches your sense of what you like, what you don't like, which I think, you know, influences the things you make in the future as well, doesn't it?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think it's really helpful to look at it that way. Like the idea that we have of like, I need a consistent routine. I need to write every day. I need to do paint every day. I need to do whatever every day. Like not necessarily, you know, and I think when we allow ourselves to have flexibility and warmth towards ourselves, warmth towards our creativity, it really, really helps. And in fact, I was going to tell you this story. This is amazing. We have a mutual friend who's from Japan, and she went to her husband's hometown over the summer, and she sent me this amazing little video of a, this is Jordana, amazing. Like she made a little raft, like out of twigs and grasses woven together, and put it on, I guess it's a small pond. And in the video, there's a frog riding on it.
What? Did she put the frog on there? Or did the frog just jump on it?
Maybe her daughters did it. But like, I'm not sure how the frog got on there. Because, you know, frogs do like to jump on
things. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe it just got up there. Maybe they, I don't know. I'm not sure. But this is such a great example, isn't it? Of like, yes. That's not a creative thing to do. It's something that came out of that moment.
Yeah. Yep.
And brought so much joy and like connection to that place, connection to the animals in that place, the materials of that place. It's not something that could have been predicted or scheduled or, you know, any of that, but how supremely creative and wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that when we're traveling, that's how I would sum it up, is to give ourselves room to look at the world differently, to take in what's different in our environment, to enjoy it, to see it as food for our creativity, and to just allow whatever happens.
Yeah, I think that sounds wonderful. That's great advice.
Yeah. Thank you so much for this question. We love hearing your questions. Please feel free to email us with your questions at thecreativitycafe21@gmail.com. Or you can also send us a question via private message on Instagram. We are The Creativity Cafe. Are we The Creativity Cafe 21 or Creativity Cafe 21? I can't remember. One of those on Instagram as well. So thank you as always, and we'll see you next time. If you like The Creativity Cafe podcast, please subscribe and share it with other people who you think might like it too. Subscribing means that you never miss an episode, which means that we get to share all of these delightful conversations with you, knowing you'll get to hear every single one. You can subscribe by going to the show page on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts, and then just tapping on the plus sign or clicking on follow. It really helps the pod for you to do that. While you're there, if you'd be willing to leave us a rating and a review, we would love to have that too. We love to read what you think and hear your opinions, your thoughts, your feelings about the Creativity Cafe podcast. So please do go and leave us a rating and a review. Thanks, everyone.